Hej och välkomna till avsnitt 34 av Game of Stocks. Det är Danne, eller värdeinvesteraren, som pratar. Och det här är avsnitt 34 som sagt. Vi analyserar Quanto Payment Services. Det är en analys gjord av Douglas eller Investacus. Och det här är ett sponsrat inlägg av Listing Partners LLC. Och i och med att många av deras kunder är globala så kommer vi ta det här avsnittet på engelska. Och Quanto Payment Services kommer noteras på Kanadabörsen inom en snar framtid. Och när vi vet mer exakt datum och det är officiellt så kommer vi att tweeta ut om det eller gå ut med det i podden kanske. Och som disclaimer så vill vi bara säga att både jag och Douglas är investerade i bolaget.
Och även som sagt, jag jobbar via mitt andra bolag med Listing Partners. Därför har jag gjort analysen.
Vi vill också påminna om att vi kommer lägga upp pdf-en av analysen på gameofstocks.nu. Så följ gärna den för att hänga med i analysen lättare. Över till dig Douglas för analysen. Nobody. Okay, if you're Warren Buffett or if you're Jimmy Buffett, nobody knows if the stock is going to go up, down, sideways, or in circles. Ups.
Hi everyone, welcome to the podcast. This is a sponsored podcast by Listing Partners LLC. Just a disclaimer, me and Danny has both invested in Quanto Payment Services. And this also is analysis made by me. And I'm also working for Listing Partner LLC as head of analytic desk. So let us introduce Quanto Payment Services. Quanto was started in 2012 as a greenfield operation where it will change the payment services as they saw it. They are a PSP player, as it said, it's a payment solution provider. So in simple terms, they provide payments for merchants to be able to, get paid for their services and goods. Quanto has developed a state-of-the-art solution that include recurring payments for customer solutions, MPI security without banking involvement and geographical independence, interactive voice response, cross-border acquiring solution, and blockchain readiness. And this is just a few things that they have done in their platform and is a available at the moment. So let's go into it.
Yeah, and also just to say this up front, we will explain some of these different terminologies of payment service provider, for instance, what a gateway is later on in the episode. So don't worry about that.
Let's start from the beginning with the mission and vision of Quanto. Quanto's vision is to make the global payments simple, flexible, and cost-efficient by challenging structures and procedures of the established market. Many competing payment solutions are focusing on national businesses only. Quanto strives to be providing merchants with cross-border solutions focusing on international payments. Also, the mission of Quanto is to become a one-stop shop for payments by providing merchants with a global, cost-competitive and effective electronic payment solution, thereby allowing them to receive payments reliably, securely, now and in the future. Quanto strives to be among the leaders EMAA and APAC multi-connectivity PSP globally measured by processing volume while being profitable. So Quanto has big ambitions with vision and mission, but also strives to be a leader in this field, and they are only starting in 2012. And as they say to themselves, the value proposition of Quanto is to be a global payment initial service provider and provider of payment infrastructure on the edge of conquering a huge USD market for payment services globally. And essentially they will do it through their platform, which we have in the documents a picture of. And all the services that they will be able to handle with the platform is integration of ERP systems, risk management, payments, of course, configurations of working with other system, analysis of cash flows, and also monitoring monitoring the risk and monitoring all the cash flows going in.
Yeah, risk management, basically.
Yeah, they have kind of two risk management profiles here, by first monitoring in real time and then also risk management by seeing how much creditor is out and in and see where the flows is coming from. And as this is one of the state of the art and can service all sorts of payments. Also give a real-time analysis about cash flow, provide a tool for management risk, customizable to consumers' need of branding. This can be a white label solution for them.
Yeah, they have several customers using white label solutions today, right?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And configuration of users on the platform, integration to ERP system and monitoring tools to be updated on the business. Yeah, so they have a state-of-the-art platform, as said, and they also have built it so it's really modular, so they can configure it and work and be smooth with integration of other systems. So let's start to explain the payment flow here in Qantas platform. They have three gateways. Of those are two white label solutions that they have bought from other gateway providers, and one is their own. So with these three combined, they can handle all sorts of payments that is needed. Also, they can equip and integrate a new acquirer smoothly, since they are versatile in these three gateways. And we will explain more what acquirer are in the forward when we explain all the payment value chain.
Yeah, and also what a gateway is.
Yes, exactly. So we have a picture below that explains the gateway technology and how many solution you can actually achieve a payment here. So Quanto can receive payments online, offline, recurring payments, manual payments, invoices, e-invoices, of course, included in their call center solutions as interactive voice recognition, and also link to payment, emails and mobile payments, refunds, and etc. And also other payments can be done. So essentially, they can provide a merchant with all the payment solutions. The merchant wants or needs to facilitate payments to their customers.
Yes, so there's a lot of options of how to pay through their platform, basically.
Yes, exactly. So this gives a merchant versatility when they come to Quanto and really makes them a one-stop shop when it comes to payments and providing them, and also with the platform's versatility and other configuration with risk management and so on, gives the a lot of added on value mm-hmm. for a merchant when they're purchasing and solving payments through Quanto.
Yeah, and it's quite important because when you look at merchants and if they don't offer enough payment options, you see like statistically a lot of buyers just stop when they reach the payment site because they don't have the option they want to pay with, for instance.
It could yeah, be exactly.
Apple Pay, or I want to pay with a PayPal wallet or whatever. So having a lot of options makes it so you have more buyers coming in and not basically stopping their purchase.
Yeah, and one data point we have here in Sweden is if a company is not providing Klarna checkout, yeah. they are seeing a lot lower conversion rate on their platform and exactly. seeing it's like, okay, I can't pay through Klarna. Mm-hmm. They're a lot slower in actually purchasing the stuff or even purchasing at all.
Exactly. So they cancel their purchase, basically.
Yeah, and if you think about the market in that way, you are not only just a payment facilitator, you're also a unique selling point when it comes to customers' payment, because that is really important when you have e-commerce. Payment is kind of the one and only interaction with your customer at the moment, because you are taking away the social interacting in the store and guidance and so on. So I feel, and I know the statistics is talking with me here, that payments is more of a strategic point in customer integration and customers' relationships.
Yeah.
So that is really important forward. And as said, Quanto's platform is available to go cross-border and not focusing and not dependable on a geographical area. The platform is also secure by being PSI and EMV certified for safety and security. And also for the merchant and the customer's security, also have a MPI security, which is 3D security that is now a legal requirement when you do e-commerce payments in Europe.
And how does that work?
As it has it set up, you need second authentication. And then how the most similar is done in Europe It's by sending a text message through, so you get a code and then you type that in. So you have both your credit card number and information there, and then also you have this text message that you send in, because then it's not dependable about like any EID that you have in certain countries. So this is totally agnostic based on the infrastructure you have in another country.
Yeah, so for instance, most Swedish people that are listening, we have mobile banking ID, but yeah, that's not a global system. So this works more globally. Yeah, it's very important for anti-fraud, basically.
Yeah, and especially since it's a requirement by the government right now in Europe to have it. But I also know that it was not that successful in implementing here in the beginning of the year, since, yeah, they didn't have the infrastructure and it didn't work. It was not tested properly. And I know that Quanto has tested it when they were in Singapore with us. So,
yeah.
So that is a solution that is really high security for both the merchant and the customer, when to actually know that it's something is paid correctly. Quanto's platform is also facilitating these payments through a variety of payment interfaces that the merchant can use. Internet shop, mail order, call center, physical shop, e-invoicing and normal invoicing, public terminals and mobile services.
Yeah, so basically you can pay through the web or using a virtual terminal or like a point of sales terminal at a physical shop or like the NFC terminals with your phone. Basically the near field communication technology.
Yes, exactly. So this, they are doing that and having their system connected with a lot of international and local agencies. And since the platform is that versatile as it is, a new acquirer who wants to be receive payments from a merchant, if they are using anyone else that Quanto is not having, it's really simple to connect them to Quanto's platform.
Yeah. And again, this is very important to have the different payment interfaces, because like we said earlier about the customers canceling their shopping or payment when they reach the payment interface, if you don't have enough interfaces or different ways to pay, you basically run the risk of a customer canceling a purchase.
Yeah, exactly. And if we just put Quanto in the global value chain here of payments, and I know you have, Danny, you have a explanation here that will help the listeners and everyone else.
Yeah, exactly. So since there's a lot of terminology like merchants, acquirers, issuers, and PSP, like payment service providers and payment processors, we thought we might clarify and give more of a generic explanation of how a digital payment or a card payment works.
Yeah, because I don't think everyone understands how many moving parts and people who are actually involved in one payment, who is taking, what, half a second to be approved when you're doing payments in your grocery store. So, and yeah, so take it away.
Yeah, so let's start with a merchant. You're a merchant and you want to be able to accept digital payments. And today you can't. So you want to accept payments through a web interface, like an e-shop, or through a point of sales terminal. Right now, you only accept cash. And what you have to do is you have to contact an acquiring bank. So when we talk about acquirers, this is what we're talking about. And the acquiring bank is a bank that lets a merchant open a merchant account so you can receive money from these digital or card payments.
Yeah, and what kind of banks are we talking about? Acquiring bank. It could be just your normal bank in your national situation.
Yeah, exactly. Like the normal bank you have for having just a normal bank account. So basically, a lot of banks are acquiring banks. So the important thing is the acquiring bank that opens a merchant account has to be a part of a card association network or a payment network. So for instance, if you want to receive payments from a customer that has a Visa card, that Visa card has that Visa association, the Visa network, the acquiring bank needs to be a part of that network. So they have to have a cooperation with Visa. The acquiring bank also needs to have cooperation with other payments or networks as well. If you want to, for instance, also be able to accept MasterCard, Amex,
UnionPay, YeeCB, all of those. What you usually see a sticker with the cards they are...
Yeah, you can pay with.
Yeah, that you can pay with next to the terminal when you're paying.
Exactly. And that depends on what acquirer you have chosen.
Yeah.
So, for instance, an acquiring bank might have several... be a part of several networks.
Hopefully, otherwise it can be a bad bank.
Exactly. So, that's the acquirer. And then you have, of course, the buyer that wants to buy the product. And the buyer might want to pay with different payment options. So, let's say the buyer has... like I said earlier, a Visa card. That Visa card, everyone that has a Visa card knows, or a MasterCard, knows that you have to go to a bank to get an issued card. So that's why it's called an issuing bank. The issuing bank is the bank that actually issues the cards for the customers. So, for instance, if an issuing bank, or if you have a Visa card issued from a bank, that issuing bank needs to be a part of Visa's card network, like the acquirer also needs to be a part of Visa's network. And both of the banks, both issuing and acquiring bank, needs to be a part of the same Visa network for this payment to be processed.
So it's a lot of moving parts and a lot of who needs to talk with each other. It's not like a normal highway where you can just go on and get to, like, say, every road leads to Rome, like, in that way.
No, there's a lot of different islands of networks, and yeah, they exactly. all need to be interconnected. So
and so to speak, in that analogy, it's like that road, you need to pay the toll to be connected to the next island and
yeah.
so on.
And that's yeah. the fee that you have yeah. to pay for the different, like the acquiring bank takes a fee, the payment processor, the payment service provider takes a fee. And now we haven't even begun explaining how they are connected in this.
Yeah, and I think why I think this is complicated is because we as normal buyers are usually in this... what do you say, network, mm-hmm. just as the one who is paying for stuff.
Yeah, we just use the card.
yeah, and we just see the front thing, and we just see the terminal, and we just see approved, and then it's on our way. We are not connected. We are not a merchant that talk with everyone else.
No.
We are not a bank who probably see everything else that a merchant doesn't even know. They exactly. doesn't even know who is connected with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically what happens is you swipe your card at the merchant or the seller, and you're the buyer, the merchant has a merchant account via the acquiring bank they're working with. So the information from when you swipe the card goes via a payment service provider and a gateway. So the payment has to go through a gateway.
Yes, and to explain here, this is where Quanto shine. It's here who they what they can connect the merchant with the acquire bank in this way, in those multiple solution of both interfaces and both ways of us accepting payments.
Yeah, exactly. And these gateways are connected to all the different acquirers based on what country is it, or how the different where the different banks are.
Yeah, and usually this is usually the limitation of a merchant. It's actually what is available in your country, and it's usually national provider who is that. And if you want to go the next step, to go to a next country, like here in Sweden, we're just 10 million people, you need to go to the next step pretty fast, because your target group is probably pretty small, and you probably need to go at least 2 countries, 4 countries, 5 countries pretty fast. And if you're digital, you probably go to Europe kind of like in the instant you are actually introducing your product to your market.
Yeah. So basically what happens is the transaction information from the card gets sent to a payment processor. And that is depending on what payment processor the acquiring bank the merchant has chosen are working with. But this information gets sent via the payment gateway, and that is up to the payment service provider to do. And like I said, the gateway is a software. Basically, payment gateways are software and servers that transmit transaction information to acquiring banks. And they also get responses from issuing banks, because the issuing bank needs to come back and clear the money and say, okay, whoever the customer was that swiped the card, do they have enough funds in their account? So that gives an approved or declined response, and that has to go through back to the gateway. And the gateway is very important because they're encrypted, so it can't be hacked, or it's very hard at least to hack. So the encryption is very important.
Yeah, but why this is important is because this is the validation and also checking the information to send it. Because if this would be hacked in a way, like all your sensitive information about a payment would be official and would be retrieved from this gateway.
Yeah. So it's very sensitive data, and so it's very important with the security when it comes to gateways. And and payment gateways usually charge those who use them per transaction fee. That's a normal way of working.
Yeah, and this will come to because, yeah, Quanta has their own revenue model, so we'll come to that in a minute.
Yeah, so basically, like I explained, payment service providers, they partner with the acquiring banks and their payment processors, and some payment service providers are also a payment processor, so they do several things in the value chain, not only one part of the value chain. So they offer merchants the capability to accept payments, basically. And what happens is when you send the transaction details to the acquiring bank via the gateway, then the payment processor get the information, the transaction details. They send that through the card network. So the card network is, for instance, Visa in this case. So Visa has a communication via the acquiring bank and also a communication with the issuing bank that issued the Visa card. So the card network then sends the information to the issuing bank. So let's say John Doe swiped his Visa card. The issuing bank will check John Doe's balance, see, okay, he has enough money to make this purchase. That information gets sent back to the network, the card network, and then gets sent back to the acquiring bank, which then gets sent back to the merchant, and basically on the point of sale terminal or on the website, it will say, boo, approved. And that takes about 2 to 3 seconds, everything we explain here.
Yeah, not even 2 to 3 seconds, it usually take a lot less, actually.
Yeah, maximum. Yeah. But basically, this a lot goes on from the moment you swipe a card. Mm. Until you get that approved. And a lot of different companies are involved in that value chain.
Yeah, exactly. And when we are talking about this, I understand it maybe not be that simple to just listen and take in. We have a picture in the PDF that explains this simplified, because there are a lot of moving parts here. It's like you have 5-6 companies, and then we haven't talked about even the point of sales terminal. There could be 2 companies involved in that one, and so on and so on.
Yeah,
so,
for instance, the terminal could be from a company that does nothing more than that.
Well, you just provide this terminal. Exactly. And then you have the software integration of maybe the PSP or another provider of that.
Yeah.
So this value chain of payment is really complicated. It's not simplified or kind of standardized. It is in a way, but it's still...
Yeah,
you could be a lot. You could be a lot as one provider in this one.
Yeah. So I hope this makes what we're talking about a little bit more clear and all the moving parts. Hopefully.
Yeah, but if we talk about the really important part here as a PSP, what is that? It is connection with acquirers. So you can accept payments for the majority of merchants. And here Quanto has around 400 acquired banks connected to their platform. So... Yeah. That is giving a lot of versatility, and since it's so easy to connect to this platform, it's not a problem for a merchant to ask Quanto if they're connected to their bank that they are using, and they can just call up and get a connection through our API, I think.
Yeah, and maybe a stupid question, but like, for instance, the border-to-border payments, I take it that having the different gateways and a lot of like a big acquiring network and a lot of different payment solutions and everything like that makes it possible. For instance, so let's say you have a person from outside of Europe paying with a card in Europe, and then you have an acquiring bank that is European, for instance, but then you have an issuing bank in America, and like everything like that requires that you have the network built up.
Yeah, exactly. And that is the world is becoming more complicated since we are more global. So to be available to both accept payments through the most of the card networks like ECB, UnionPay, Visa, MasterCard, Amex, it's essential, but also to have the acquirer. So here you need to be like the node connector, but between issuer and acquirers. And here Quanto has built a huge network through the years who is connected to the platform, which makes it a one-stop shop in that way. And also through this network, being able to do it cross-border.
Yeah.
So they can follow their customers to a new market if they need.
Yeah.
So more to add to this wonderful platform Quanto has. They're developing a mobile payment application that could be working account to account, that would work also beyond national borders. So we have solutions such as Swish here in Sweden, which is a solution that is provided by the banks in Sweden. That's why it works here. But we also have things like PayPal, Apple Pay, Samsung Pay.
Cash App, for instance.
Cash App, of course, you want to plug that. But the biggest problem with these is that they are usually dependent on a credit card to be connected or a debit card to be connected to do anything. What Quanta Solution would do is to make it account to account, and they will work on the internal banking system.
Yeah, so basically Swish, the Swedish solution.
Yeah, Swish taken globally.
Yeah, and that's really cool.
That's really cool. And I look forward to see that on the market. Also to say that Quanta's platform is also already ready to process payments through blockchain. So this mm-hmm. is something they can build on and could actually, yeah, provide payments today. But I don't think the infrastructure is available at the moment through all like the moving parts that we talked about in a payment solution.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's really good that they have that in-house. And because blockchain, a lot of people speculate and think that blockchain is a really interesting and good and secure technology, and the ledger system, and that will be a big thing in the future. So it's always good to be blockchain ready.
Yeah. And if not if like crypto is being huge, but still the technology of blockchain, the value in that is huge. And to be ready here already and be in the forefront, I think it's really important for Quanta. And because they are now, they say they are the challengers and the innovators on this market. And to be in blockchain, it's a little testament that they are on that way.
Yeah. And I mean, like you said, the blockchain technology, no one is questioning that. Some people question Bitcoin and cryptos. Mm. Understandably so, but blockchain, everyone see the value in blockchain.
Yes. Quanta's revenue model is two-folded and therefore differentiating from the competitors. It has fixed fee per transaction component and a revenue split component. And this is making it easy for the merchant to see that they are with them, and as soon as the merchant is growing, they are growing with them. So this is one in a way. They're not taking too much from the merchant, and the merchant is seeing that they are sharing the success. So in a way, they are keeping sunk costs down for the merchant and not making it too costly in the beginning if you want to jump on the Quanta chain to use them as a provider. And to understand here, the income is partially invoiced by Quanta to its merchants, and also partially received by profit sharing through Quanta Acquirer. So they're playing on the both sides here. And yeah, what do you feel about the revenue model?
I mean, it's very interesting with the fixed fee per transaction is a usual way of working, like I said, for the gateways and like accepting payments, each payment that go through. So, I mean, it scales up with the number of transactions, of course, but that it's also a revenue split. So actually, if it becomes like the purchase volumes becomes bigger, that's very interesting. Because then you can grow, like you said, as the customer grows and becomes bigger. And it's kind of a win-win for both.
Yeah, exactly. So Quanta is a winner. And also the merchant, when the transaction volume is going up, but also when the amount volume is going up.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
it's in both. Of course, it's in the merchant's interest for that to go up, but also, of course, for Quanta.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that is showing that Quanta is not only a facilitator. Here, purchase of services, go make your transactions. They are also a partner here. So with the whole platform, they are helping and developing it after the needs of one supplier all the time, and making configurations so it works for their supplier and what they want, and having the white label solution working according to their standards in both design and both like everything else with the website. So it works.
Yeah, and it's skin in the game, basically. It's in their best interest for the merchant customers to basically transact more and spend more.
Yeah, exactly. And if we go to Quanta today, Quanta today has processed approximately 1.1 million transactions. And according to Quanta Cell themselves, they need around 3 million transactions to be profitable. This is to be profitable, and that is also dictating they're not investing to grow more. So just to reach 3 million transactions doesn't make them profitable by
automatically. It's like profitable.
If they have the steady state.
Exactly. If they reach 3 million, don't invest in anything to grow, done. Good, super, we are profitable. And, well, we both don't want to see that here.
No.
No, exactly. And at the moment, all the transactions are online and going through apps on 55 websites, which are growing rapidly at the moment. So taking consideration here is the five biggest consumers stands for more than 80% of Quantum revenue and volume.
Yeah, the five biggest customers.
Yeah, exactly. Consumers, customers.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have a figure below that shows which segments these customers in. And they are hotels in the European Union, IT provider in European Union and North and South America. They have a telco company in Europe. They have a public service and also retail here in Europe. So it's understandable since it's a Danish company. That most customers is based in Europe here, but they're going abroad.
Yeah, and we're gonna talk a little bit about that later.
Yeah, exactly. Because this is what have happened, and it's moving really fast with Quanto. Mm-hmm. And I know since this material was compiled, they have increased their customers from around 55, as I said, to around 75 at the moment.
Oh, so that's quite, like, percentage-wise, that's almost 40% increase in customers.
Yeah, exactly. And this document was produced in late summer last year. So in 6 months, it has happened a lot, and Quanto is moving forward rapidly.
So yeah, that's quite impressive. So in 6 months, basically the number of customers have grown by 40%, and that's just 40% new customers. And like the transaction volume and also the volume of the payments might have gone up with the existing. Only speculating, but I mean...
It's safe to assume that since both the websites is that existing customers is rapidly growing. Yeah. And then also to add new customers, well... That is just a simple explanation. It should be more revenue and should be more transaction at the moment. So if we work to Quanto's future, because as they said, they have a vision and mission, especially in the mission to be the leading multi-connective PSP in the EMEA and APEC regions.
So yeah, basically EMEA is Europe, basically.
Europe and
Middle East.
Middle East and also Africa, actually.
Yeah, and Asia Pacific is APAC.
Yeah, Asia. So they're kind of the rest of Asia. So they're kind of what they're not focusing on is North America and South America, which is kind of making sense. Because in US and in North America, it's a lot of fintechs there that is providing payment solutions at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, low-hanging fruit and so on. Close to home also, you know, easier to maybe work with the acquiring banks. And
yeah, exactly. So, because it's easier to focus on where you are at the moment, and that is Europe. And in a way, Europe is the most regulated market of all of them, and APEC is the least regulated market of them. So they are playing both sides, and I think this is competitive advantage because they are taking the high security need of being a PSP in Europe to APEC and providing the same
security standards.
Yeah, security standards with the 3DS and also with all the certification of the platform.
Yeah, and it's like the security part, for instance, if we take the American market, it's actually crazy how non-secure their payments is. I lived in the States 2 years ago. I moved back 2 years ago, roughly, and there, basically, if you have a credit card, you don't even need a PIN. You just have a signature. And then they don't even look at your ID to compare the signature.
Yeah.
So if you lose your card, anyone can swipe your card.
Yeah. And and also, when you look at payments in US, it's a lot of polarization, if you would say, the solution you have. You have both the Cash Apps and PayPal, who is really in the forefront, and then you have making payments not even to employees because you're making checks.
Yeah, they still use checks. I actually, when I lived there, I paid some of my utility bills, like my electricity bill. I had to submit a check and send it in through the mail. It's crazy. So
like that kind of security, it's also a thing that I think Europe is kind of
ahead, especially in Nordics, with those. We are kind of here in Stockholm, we are kind of not even accepting cash anymore.
Yeah, so become a no cash society.
Yeah, exactly. So in that way, I think it's really important. I think it makes sense. They are focused on EMA and APAC.
Mm-hmm.
Since the majority of the digital payments is here in Europe.
And specifically in Asia.
Yeah, but I mean that we are sophisticated.
Yeah.
And they in Asia are frog leaping. They're skipping cards. Mm-hmm. They still use them. It's still rapidly growing.
It's more mobile payments from them.
Yeah, mobile payments is bigger. But it's also bigger because you have connected your cards. So it's like when you're calculating what you're getting paid by, it's still a mobile payment, mm-hmm. but with a credit card.
Yeah.
So it's like it counts twice, which is making the data kind of failed. So this is what really I like. And if we look at the future of Quanto, that they have expressed themselves with the customers, I think it really makes sense of what kind of trajectory they are in. And as a first step into Asian Pacific region is a joint venture that Quanto will have with Aditya Birla Group. There, as this information in this document is printed, it is in the talks and then late in the negotiation and will take place and be operational in next year, 2020. And to give a little update on this, they are having it signed and it was just a matter of internal and also political to getting it secure and to getting it approved by the local authority. And as at the moment, they are still going on plan and nothing is terminated.
So they have a letter of intent.
Yes, exactly. They have a letter of intent and both parties has the intent of holding that letter.
Yeah.
So just to give a little background and also what this can mean for Quanto. They have estimation on the transactions in this project approximately around 250 million transactions year one. That is 2020. And by year three, they have an estimate of 400 million transactions.
And that, to put it in perspective, they said they needed to reach around 3 million
to
be profitable, and they have 1.1 million today.
Yes.
And I guess they assumed a certain margin or transaction fee when they say 3 million. Would you say the potential for these transactions are higher or lower than what they expect for the when they say they have to be reach 3 million to be profitable?
Well, if take this in consideration, here they are not a Birla Bank will not be a merchant. Here they will be acquired. So Quanto will be their back office to do payment here. So in a way, they are not having the same, business model with Aditya Birla as they will have with other customers. So in a way, it's a new vertical in their business model. But and here, to take into consideration, it is India. It's a low-cost country. It will be less payments per transaction here.
Yeah, but the volumes are still so much larger.
Yeah, the volume is still a lot larger. And in taking consideration, Aditya Birla Group, as just the group in all, not the bank side, is a 43 billion company that is in the league of Fortune 500. They are working on 14 different industries in over 34 different countries and have a workforce of 120,000 employees. And here, the bank itself, it has around 60 million accounts. So just to take consideration, this is estimate of the lowest what they should have in 250 million. So it could be a lot more transactions per year than this is. This is just the lowest estimates, as it says. And so this will be a huge step into Asia, but also a huge step in increasing the volume of transactions here. And as said, this is a joint venture with Aditya Birla, so here the revenue streams is a little bit unclear what has happened, but all in all, it will be a huge thing for Quanto to provide the services for Aditya Birla here.
Yeah, this is a huge customer. Like you said, the transaction volumes are insane compared to what they have today. And this is just one example of a customer they're working on.
Yeah, exactly. And I in a way, you shouldn't make too big of assumptions on this. I think it more should be a sign or maybe a sign of the future what they can actually achieve, Quantum, because before 2019 they kind of were in a proof of concept and proof of it's actually working. Now they are in the scale-up phase. And here it could go really fast if you just take this in consideration. 1.1 million transaction to 250 million transaction. It's huge amount of increase of transaction here.
Yeah, the growth is insane if you look at just the amount of transactions. Mm. And yeah, like you said, it's... I think this deal is very important from several aspects. One is it shows the technology of the platform that they can handle, because they already stress tested this with Birla, from my understanding.
Yes.
So they know it works, and the amount of transaction, it shows that they can handle them. So that's one thing. It's proof of the technology with a big customer. And also, like you said, it shows that how big of a difference one customer, if you find the right customer, can make. And the amount of growth you can get from one customer. Because before they had 55 customers and a transaction of 1.1 million. So yeah. That's smaller merchants, very small e-commerce stores, for instance. It's not huge volume per, if you split that out across the 55 customers. So here you have one customer with 250 million. So they can really very fast grow if they find the right customers.
Exactly. And I just think that this will be kind of the start of the scale up, and I also shows the also shows the advantages of the increase of something who can go really fast here for Quanto, from being 1.1 million and then one customer added, and then we see the other customers also added. So from here it could be a really fair tale story in the terms of growth. So, then let's go over to the skin in the game part. The shareholders of Quanto before the pre-IPO. Here on the top is, of course, Jesper V. Skarstengard, which is the partner, founder and CEO of Quanto. He owns 54.4%.
Yeah, and I think that's really important from an investment point of view, to see that the founder and the CEO is so heavily invested in the company, and having a share of 55% is really, that makes me feel comfortable. And also his experience, you didn't mention that, but maybe you can mention.
Yeah, exactly. Experience wise, he has 20 years of experience in the payment industry, holding position within sales, business development. For 7 years, he was employed by Royal Bank of Scotland, and essentially just building payment solutions for other merchant that was connected at Royal Bank of Scotland.
Yeah, and that is super important from my point of view, because connections are everything. When you have a killer product but you don't have the right, can't get to sit at the table with the right people to show them what you have, and it's kind of might be hard to reach out with marketing even though you have a great product. So a great network of banks and people like that can really help.
Yeah, exactly. And if you take in consideration here, it's not a solution or not a product that you can go out and make a commercial in the local TV. It's like it's really selective marketing to really selective kind of people you need to do, because essentially it's not much people in the world who's taking the decision of choosing the payment solution provider to your company. So it's CFO, CEOs, and maybe chief technical officers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this is really important with the network, to like direct and indirect to come into, as you said, sit with the right table and discuss here. And so we go forward with Peter Christiansen, partner. He owns 27.2%. He has a bachelor in computer science from University of Copenhagen and one of the first in Denmark to develop a payment gateway. Peter here has the responsibility of developing the payment solution for all banks covered by Scandinavis Data Center. So he has experience and have worked primarily with data architecture and the technical aspects of payment solutions.
Okay, so he's the tech guy, and maybe yeah.
Well, I think it's wrong for us two to say this is a tech guy. I think everyone is a tech guy here.
Yeah. No, but yeah, you know what I mean. More like some people are, works with sales and more management.
Yeah, of course.
But so he's more technically oriented.
Yeah, right? But it's a small team. Mm. So I think everyone is tech guy here, and yeah. I think it's just a few positions that is sales and so on.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, and then we'll go over to Thomas Hogard. He's also a partner, and I know he's the CFO of Quanto. He owns 10.9%, and he holds a Bachelor of Commerce with specialization in finance. He has been financial manager of Siemens for 10 years, CFO of Danske Cable TV, TDC, and has been bought by Tele2, and has various experience from executive management positions within business administration, financials, HR, and etc. from international companies.
Okay.
So this is a guy who knows his shit.
Yeah, a lot of experience.
Yeah, exactly. And then we have Leon Samse Pedersen, a partner, 2.5%. He's a bachelor in finance, management, and leadership. Previously worked for Danske Bank, TeliaSonera in positions as CFO, CSO, and management consultant within various industries, and have a huge international experience and strong entrepreneurial skills. So yeah, well, to sum it up, Leon is the chief sales guy here.
Mm-hmm.
And in such a small company, you can understand it's kind of everyone is working with sales, everyone is working with platform.
Mm-hmm.
Per Hasselby Nielsen, partner, 5%. He's an electrical engineer with experience from selling his own business and have had serial leading positions within sales and marketing as his acting noun BA relations.
Yeah, and the fun thing to see that there's so basically so much skin in the game. There's the company's own. By yeah, exactly. A lot of people working in the company.
Yeah, exactly. And that is really important here. It's even if you have a good product, it is still the team who is need to put all the work together. And with all the technical knowledge and also the experience from various positions here, I think they are set to execute on what they actually want and to achieve it. So let's go over to the global payment market. This is 11 pages in this document. I won't go through it all because then this podcast will be 3 hours and that we don't have time with, and I think you will sleep by that time.
Yeah, and I've actually read through this document before. I can tell you that it's really good, interesting information about the global payment market. So if you really want to delve into the weeds and understand more about the global payment markets, be sure to go on our website and check out the PDF that we will release with this episode, because it's really useful information and it's a really good analysis of the global payment.
Yes, exactly. So just to give a little hint of what we will go here. So historically, the payment markets have been handled by banks, but as the world has become more digital and the banks is not that fast in changing what they need, this has been a field for fintechs to get in. So it is believed as the future, as banks are generally slow to implement changes and they are not seen proactive in the innovation of payments as other actors are in the market, as we can see with Square, we can see with PayPal, we can see with Adyen.
Yeah.
And in historically, there has been payments has been handled like a commodity. It's a commoditized product. It's like, okay, you facilitate payments, just make the payments. It's nothing else, nothing more. And we can see the changes is becoming more and more value-added services. For example, as we said with Klarna, yeah, you reach a higher conversion of sales if you have the checkout of Klarna here in Sweden.
Yeah, so it's value-added for merchant and the customer.
Yeah, exactly. So this is believed to change as many services related to payments are asked for, especially when consumers who is asking for more simpler and efficient ways of payment and also more security in the payments.
Mm-hmm.
So together with e-commerce, has the consumer market gone from being physical with cash and checks, like US still are mostly today, to digital payments with credit cards, debit cards, direct deposit, mobile payment solutions, and so on.
Prepaid cards.
Yeah, prepaid cards also.
So you have a good graph here.
Yeah, exactly. We have a good graph from 2003 to 2012, and you can see it's a steady state of decline in checks who is paid like that, and then we have debit card, credit cards, and prepaid card who is increasing a lot.
At a rapid rate.
Yeah, exactly. So the usage of these credit cards will not slow down. It will probably just pick up as the most of the
most of the world is catching on. And then we go over to a little index about the readiness of maturity in payments here. We can see that the innovation readiness and the payment maturity in different countries. And I think here it will be really important to highlight that India, as Quanto is entering that through Birla, is quite high here. They are innovation readiness in the top three. And also payment maturity is higher actually than Germany and United States. So they are ready for innovation, and they also mature enough to accept those payments. So this is really an interesting way. And if we just take a country such as Sweden, our innovation readiness is the lowest of them all, but we have a really high payment maturity, and it's just kind of UK, Australia and Brazil who is actually beating us on this.
Brazil, that's very surprising to me.
Yeah, it's well, and this is the data says itself. And if we go below, you can see the additional information about this, how they kind of see it. So if the payment maturity metric is 1.1, it's secure, cash or equivalent, traditional e-commerce, buy a button, check, wire transfer, in-person banking. If it's reaching 2, which is payment maturity, no one is reaching. It's consumer centric. It's traditional electronic to paid person to person,
peer to peer, or person to person.
Person to person payments, QR codes, mobile wallets, debit cards, prepaid cards, online banking, and then we have 3.1, which is seamless, and no one is even like close to this. It's cashless or digital messaging apps, smart home devices, wearables, contactless, and mobile banking. And yeah, just to say here, you need to reach it with the whole country to reach 3.1, because we have some populations already doing this. And with innovations like Facebook and Cash App from Square is coming, then we will see like the global market moving to this.
Mm-hmm.
So on total payment revenue, we can see that from 2008 to 2017, it has increased quite significantly from a little bit above 1 billion.
Trillion.
1 trillion, sorry. The numbers and is coming here is too big.
Yeah,
to 2007, a little bit less than 2 trillion. And when you take... In dollars, of course. And if you see on the estimate level, they are estimating about 2021 that will reach a little bit less than 3 trillion US dollars. So just in 4 years... it will be a 50% increase here.
Yeah, so, and these numbers are from Statista as well.
Yes, of course. Yes, good point to point out the source here.
Yeah, but yeah, it's very fast. It's accelerating growth and very fast growing industry and market. So there's a huge pie, but also there's many, many players as well. It's quite a lot of players in this market.
Yeah, it's quite a lot of players. And well, if you take in account here, it's what we think about Quanto in this, of course, in this analysis, it's the advantage points they have. And it's to be a one-stop shop. And I think one-stop shop and also cross-border. So they are like a competition with not like we'll call Nets, who is just competitor in Nordics. Here they're competitor with all, and like Adrian. But some key drivers in the global markets that has been determined is electronic payments and card-based payments will increase rapidly. Traditional monopolistic providers feel the heat from new providers. Costs, fee structure will start to come under pressure, but are generally still at levels hard to justify. Global e-commerce market size 2015 was USD 1.5 trillion, and it's expected to rise to 4 trillion in 2020 USD. Card-based purchases volume was about 20 trillion USD in 2015, and we increased to 55 trillion USD by the year of 2025. So it's a lot of growth to in both e-commerce and both in card-based purchase volume here. It's in 10 years it will happen a lot. Not even just increased by 100%, it's above that.
Mm-hmm.
So if we go over to digital payments, as that is the core of Quanto and also the focus, as they are doing mostly online payments. Mobile share of total e-commerce is expected to increase to 48.5% of the total e-commerce by 2020 from 23.6% in 2015. So it's a big shift that will have happen here. And usually in big shifts, it is an opportunity to go sweep in and take market share.
Yeah, so it's the payment, digital payment market might actually grow faster than the overall payment, global payment market.
Yes, exactly. And proximity and like contactless payments has jumped from near zero USD in 2013 to 100 billion USD in 2016, and expected to reach 800 billion in 2021. And then you can see the growth here is like from zero to a lot of volume.
Yeah, and it's not hard to understand why, because everyone who has used a contactless payment card or through their phone via Apple Pay, Google Pay, or something like that, just realize how much better it is. So it's much faster. Let's say you're in a Starbucks or something like that. There's a lot of customer, big line, not entering PIN codes and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. And merchant mobile payment acceptance network will grow by tenfold by 2020. So here you can see it's a shift from, of course, it is a shift from checks to credit cards, but it's also now a new shift from credit cards to mobile payment. That is, and here it's also important here to take in consideration, not all customers will do this. So as a PSP, you cannot just come to a merchant and say, we only offer mobile payment.
No.
Because then you will lose the customers who is not accepted or gone over to mobile payment for as their primary way to purchase services. So this is really important also. And so for digital payments are growing in 2017 to 2023 with a CAGR of 13.3%. This is globally, where the mobile point of sales payments will grow with a CAGR of 34%, and the digital commerce will have a CAGR of 8.5%. So this is huge numbers. And you can see that it's mostly growing in the mobile payments here.
Yeah.
And I think everybody is seeing this, and this is coming as more banks is accepting Apple Pay, Samsung Pay, Google Pay, and so on and so on.
Yeah, and it's not hard to see why it will grow, because it's better and faster for the consumer and the merchant, because, like I said, shorter, faster lines and stuff like that in the store. Yeah. And for banks, it solves a problem that everyone has. Like, everyone has different problems with payments, and this solves every party involved, everyone's problem. So the bank, for instance, are interested in anti-fraud. Like, for instance, biometric identification on the phone will prevent basically a lot of fraud as well.
Yeah, exactly. And that is also an important thing here. It's like a mobile phone is facilitating more ways to verify that you are the customer that want to pay.
Yeah.
So you talk about biometric, but they also have this national ID and national digital IDs, like a mobile bank ID that we have here in Sweden. You have also FreID, which is it's agnostic way to, who is not connected just to a national. You can do it in whole Europe. And also you have a NemID in Denmark. So in that way, you can really through the phone make a lot more security for a bank than you could with a credit card. It's like you have in a credit card, you only have the chip, the PIN, and you can't do much more with that.
No, exactly.
It's like a signature. It's taking too long to actually see it. It's coming on your statement that you have made a payment, PIN code, of course, that you can steal. You can transfer it to someone else that you can. Yeah, we have a lot of scammers situation that you can actually see that. But a phone, they need to cut off your thumb.
Exactly. And that's not fun. But no. But that's why I'm convinced that this will grow faster, like the prediction is here.
Yeah, exactly.
Because everyone, it's a win-win for everyone.
Yeah.
There's no one that will try to prevent the growth of this. And that's why it will grow.
Yeah, fast. And just by sheer laziness to leave the wallet at home to be able to pay with your phone.
I've done it a bunch of times, actually. I forgot my wallet.
I just thought you were lazy.
No, I'm stupid and forgetful. But I've actually forgotten my wallet several times. Gone to the store, grocery store, stood at the register looking for my wallet. And like, no, I have no wallet. I have to leave everything I collected here at the grocery store and go back. And then I'm like, but I have Apple Pay. So it's, super useful.
Yeah, exactly.
And you see the trend like in everything. Like for instance, at Tesla, you use your phone as a key. For instance,
you get in Tesla in every episode we do.
No, but I mean,
it doesn't matter if we talk about anything. You get in Tesla.
We can always talk about Tesla.
Of course, we can always talk about Tesla. And you shorted them, I heard. So we have a table of what we look to the numbers of digital and mobile payments here, as you can see with a CAGR of 34% and 8.5%, and you can see the huge numbers here. So it's 4.1 trillion we are talking about in digital commerce payments, and 2.1 trillion USD. We are talking about it. So it's huge numbers. It's not yet growth from like pennies. It's growth from enormous numbers here. So when you're looking at the outlook of payments, because not all markets is the same. If we look at the developing markets, here we have a big wave of regulations. We have need to provide anti-money laundering services, know your customer services, monitoring of cash flow, risk management, fraud detection, and so on and so on. This is putting more and more emphasis of added services on this provider of payment. So this is a thing that I think it will just continue and will put more emphasis that you are not only providing payments, you will also provide a lot of other systems that is providing services that you don't ask for like historically. So for know your customers, anti-money laundering, monitoring of cash flows and so on, and risk management, it's really important, and I think that will be the determinant of what merchant you use in the global market at the moment. And then you have the emerging markets, which is also demanding more added value services, but they also, because they don't want to be like worse than the developed counterparts, and they are coming with more regulation, but they're coming from kind of non-regulation with no regulation at all about digital payments. But here also the demand for other ways to make the payment. In Europe, we have a big demand of making payments with credit cards. Here, the young demographic in big countries who are tech savvy and have a high demand of how to pay it mostly through apps. As with China, we can see that WhatsApp and Alipay is like the biggest way to pay, and that is not something we do in Europe. We usually don't pay with app. And it's a further breakdown in this document of like different markets and so on. I will just talk about it globally. But if we talk about the challenges for mobile commerce according to the merchant itself worldwide in March 2018, the biggest problem was the ease for the use for the customers, detecting fraudulent orders, security concerns with mobile platforms. And if we take that consideration, it really translates to what is driving the markets here. You're talking about making it easy to make payments. You're talking about the security of frauds. And you also talk about the security concerns with the new thing, with the mobile platforms. And also you have accepting new payment types and also cost of new technology. So in a way, Quanto is challenging on all these parts and providing, in a way, the services in the way they want it. Also facilitating and making it easy for a customer to, well, get knowledge about mobile payment platforms. And if Quanto's platform is secure and show that they are no problem, I think they can ride on this and show that like accepting all payments is possible through their platform. So if you remember back on the maturity of payments and also innovation readiness, we saw that India was high up, and that is like important with Aditya Birla and everything like that. And then we have a graph of showing the consumers who use their mobile phone to make a payment over the last 6 months. Source is the global rise of smartphone addicts. So here you can see like the biggest ones. You have China in the top, of course. You have India and then South of Africa. You don't have any development countries here. So India is a big market in this and big in the mobile payments solutions. So if we look at the penetration rate.
And just for maybe a good comparison.
Yeah.
You have Sweden at 30% of the population actually having done a mobile phone payment. And you have the US at 30% as well.
Yeah, exactly. And China and India is 66 and 64 respectively.
Yeah. So it's double.
Yeah, it's double the population who does a mobile payment, and that's kind of showing how they have frog leaped
yeah.
That early compared with other ones.
Yeah, it's double the percentage, and imagine how much bigger the populations are as well.
Exactly.
So how much volume that drives.
Yes. So if you look at penetration rate that we have as a graph below, we can see that the graph of 70% and above is digital commerce in Europe. So here, I would say it's kind of saturated market. But if you go over to Asia, it's from 40 and increasing to a little below 60. But then you can look at the mobile point of sales payments that is happening. That is here, Asia is almost on the level of digital commerce as Africa. And I think that is really an estimate as how fast it goes in Asia.
Yeah.
And like mobile point of sales payments in Europe, it's not even above 10%. So in...
Yeah, that actually surprised me.
Yeah, so in...
Because we're still like, if you look at digital commerce in this graph, you can see that like 70% penetrated with digital. Or, yeah, roughly 70. But
yeah, exactly.
Mobile is only 10.
Yeah.
And Asia is very much larger when it comes to mobile.
Exactly. So it's really a testament of how they have frog leaped and how ready they are to accept new payments in Asia in all sort of ways. And I think that shift and that possibility, like both in Europe to switch over to mobile payments, and also this, accelerated change of making payments in Asia will give opportunity for new competitors to go in and show they can do it, because we are making our world more global.
Yeah,
and doing cross-border needs to be done then. If you don't need, or if you don't want a PPS, like supplier in every different country.
Yeah.
So that is a advantage of Quanto, and also, of course, the competitors that is also doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, and speaking of competitors, how does the market look when it comes to the different actors and market actors?
Yeah, so we have a table here that shows like a lot of actors in the payments. Payments are vast and kind of have different verticals you can talk about. But the two big players is, of course, Visa and MasterCard, which are the big players in a sort of way. And then you go down in market value, and quite heavily in market value, because Visa is a 400 million company here.
Yeah, and it's also...
400 billion company.
Yeah, exactly. $400 billion. And the thing is almost, or not almost all, but yeah, almost all, I would say, fintech companies in some way, Visa and MasterCard, have to be there.
Yes.
It's like they have to use either a credit or debit card that is a Visa or a MasterCard. So they use their cards still in the different fintech solutions.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's why they have such a huge share of the revenue.
Yeah, so if you go down and maybe look at some companies that is more about a competitor to Quanto than Visa MasterCard are, you have PayPal, you have Worldpay, Shopify, Adyen, and Wirecard, that I would say is more about a competitor for Quanto, and especially Adyen.
Yeah, I would say Adyen and Wirecard. I would, because Wirecard is basically doing the same things. Wirecard is almost more of a Quanto competitor because they also have a Europe and Asia focus, and they also because Adyen has a lot of in America, for instance, and like Uber and Spotify and stuff like that. And they also have very large customers, while Wirecard have a lot of small customers, which I think Quanto might also go that route, or that's how they have started, at least by acquiring smaller. But yeah, they have the potential to actually have very huge customers with Aditya Birla also.
Yeah, exactly. But if we go by what the expression of Jesper told in the interview we made with him, Adyen is the best competitor, and also he has a lot of friends in Adyen that started that company.
Yeah.
So I think...
Yeah, tech-wise, it might be closer.
Yeah, and I also think maybe culture and thinking-wise, because even if
Quanto at the moment has a lot of small, but that is just for proof of concept purposes. But if you look at the customer they have taken now, which one big one that is will overshadowing the other 55 ones,
yeah.
I think the route they will take is more agent wise and take big customers,
yeah,
and provide them with a specialized solution that is to their needs.
Mm-hmm.
So, but agent has market value here in this document of $23 billion.
Yeah.
And a huge amount. And also we have a table here that was provided by Quanto themselves that show kind of the competitors and payment methods and advantages they have. I won't go into that, but I think that is really interesting if someone is interested in payment services to see like geographical scope, processing volume, catalog, advantages, so on, so on. Yes, that was everything with the market, actually. And then it also ties up this analysis of Quanto. As said many times in this podcast, we will put up this PDF on the website so people can follow. We also contain like financials historically back forth. We will not go through that at the moment because in a sense that doesn't make that much sense, since one customer will throw everything off and they were just started scaling up. So yeah, like anything finishing remarks about Quanto? You have invested, so you can't be that negative.
yeah, I like the company, of course. Mm. It's a huge growing market. There's a lot of small players and like upcoming, but Quanto has such a big platform and can do so many different things. So I'm really hopeful and I think they can do great things. And I think, yeah, when they actually have that big customer, the first big customer, then I think a lot more people will realize the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm of course a little not objective in this part, but
yeah.
I think Quanto will come in and do a lot of things. They are committed, the management team. They have experience. They have also the vision and mission to do it. So it will be an interesting time here forward to follow up on Quanto and see what they're doing, and also follow up on the IPO that is coming in the coming future.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes. So that was everything for our podcast this day. As said, you find me on Twitter at Investicus.
And you find me at Varde Investera.
Yes, and also you find our podcast Twitter at Game of Stocks Nu. Also, the website of our podcast at gameofstocks.nu. And also remember, everything we say in this podcast is our own ideas and also our own analysis. So make your own conclusions about anything we say in the podcast and also your own research.
Yeah, do all your investment at your own risk and always do your homework and do due diligence. And like we mentioned earlier, we both are invested in this company.
Yes, and also I am also working with this company through Listing Partners LLC. So that's everything. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.